عجب مسیر پر.
Oh, it was a very steep path. This is Zagros, with many steep mountains and deep valleys. Oh God, what a scenery. I've seen many oak trees in Zagros in different provinces, but what makes the oak forest in Delfon in Lorestan province stand out is the color of its soil. It's red. The green trees and red soil have created astonishing scenery. I think this place is like paradise for photographers. In any moment of the day, in the morning, at noon, or at sunset, the beautiful nature of Delfon gives you a great scene from different angles as a gift. Thank God I managed to come here. It was worth it. In Persian literature, Zagros is a symbol of resistance and steadfastness by the people who live among the hard stones and have learned very well how to overcome their problems. The men and women in the Lor, Kurd, and Khashgai tribes work hard side by side in the Zagros Mountains from the northwest to the south of the beloved Iran in order to earn their daily sustenance. They've created many stories at the heart of the tough mountains. They've memorized every line of the stories and have passed them down from generation to generation. They've told many stories at the heart of Delfon since thousands of years ago. Some people say Delfon is a land that is under spell because many wars have broken out in this place along the tortuous paths, and as the locals say, the mysterious mountains in Delfon were considered by the people in the past as the best place to bury their valuables. And some local people believe that Noah's Ark landed in this region. But whether that claim is true or false, hearing them by the locals made the trip doubly interesting for me. For me, if there is a treasure in this place, it is undoubtedly the mesmerizing nature of Delfon, which has cast a spell on me with its beauty and had dragged me all the way here. Considering the archaeological discoveries in the Khatun Ban and Dasht-e-Kaveh areas, it is an established fact that the ancient residents of this breathtakingly nice region were among the first people in the world who tamed horses. Unearthing a device named bridle made by bronze in some of the ancient graves in this region proves the fact. But the interesting thing that's discovered in the graves is that the bridle of some of the horses were under the head of their owners in their burial place. A cemetery for horses has been discovered next to this ancient cemetery, which is adjacent to the cemetery where humans were buried. If the rider died before the horse would be buried in that cemetery next to the owner. Red hills of Delphon, along with the flowers, plants, and purple and oak trees, created the scenery in the spring that can be seen in few places in the beloved Iran. But besides all the beauty and the generosity of nature, seeing the traces of destruction of Mother Nature by people ached my heart. Oh my God, look how splendid this tree is. How old do you think this tree I'm honored to stand next to is? This tree is over 500 to 600 years old. In fact, oak is a tree characterized by longevity. It takes a very long time for it to grow this big. Unfortunately, there are no trees besides these two on the farm you see behind me. There was a time when this place was dotted with old oak trees. Continue the trek toward Mount Mehrab, hoping the remaining oak trees in Zagros will be preserved. Zagros has abundant flora, and if we're a little lucky, we can see rarely found plants that not everyone gets the chance to see in their lifetime. And I was very lucky on this trip. This rare flower, and in fact this plant, is a member of the Kala Lily family. It is rarely found in Iran. It is mostly spotted in the western Zagros in scattered areas. In Farsi, this black, or I'd better say, Aboriginal flower is called Baharak, or spring, because it only blossoms in the spring. The flower has a very bad odor. The locals call the plant Kalaqak, or small raven. It has an eye-pleasing metallic color. If you touch it, it feels like a donkey's ear. It is thick and velvet, but the smell is a repellent. The very beautiful plant stinks because it draws the flies. Many flies sit on the plant. The smart plant attracts the flies so it can pollinate and survive the next generations. When we walk in nature or climb the mountain, we have to watch our steps so we won't harm the plants. This plant, which is very rare in our beloved country, is at risk of extinction because of mountain climbers. We might push a species into extinction just because of our careless attitude. It's very beautiful, but the smell is really a nuisance. It stinks. I have to immediately leave this place. Nature is a symbol of God's beauty and elegance. It's always beautiful one way or another in any shape it is, but mountains are always glorious within nature and have been especially attractive for nature lovers. Usually high individual mountains like Damavand or Sabalon are elegantly outstanding compared to mountain ranges. But here in Lauristan's Delphan, there are two mountain ranges, named the Greater and Lesser Mihrab mountain ranges, that are undoubtedly as gorgeous as individual mountains.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Since the war began in Gaza in October, approximately 2 million Palestinians have been displaced from the north to the south. Of these, an overwhelming body of research documented Palestinian civilians being bombed, shot at, executed, arrested, tortured, treated in a degrading manner, and forcibly disappeared by the Zionist regime military along roads, corridors, and zones declared safe. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for the second part, please. The Electronic Intifada wrote, Sohila was alone in her apartment when the Zionist regime began its genocidal war on October 7th. All she could hear were the sounds of explosions. All she could do was pray for the people being martyred. Before returning to Gaza a few years ago, Soheila had spent a decade in Egypt. She came back as she wanted to see her nephews and nieces. Little did she know the horrors that would await her. A 63-year-old wheelchair user, Soheila lived in Sheikh Radwan area of Gaza City. She remained there after the Zionist regime ordered everyone in northern Gaza, including Gaza City, to leave their homes during the early days of the war. The situation in Sheikh Radwan became increasingly serious, especially after the Zionist regime sent tanks into the area. Israel showed no mercy toward children or older people. The violence got closer and closer to Soheila's apartment. All she could hear were explosions, the siren sound from ambulances, people screaming. The noises were so loud and intense that she thought she would go deaf. When a lull took place, Soheila heard her door being knocked. A voice called, "Is there anyone there?" She replied, "Yes, I am here." Her voice was weak and she could not raise it. The knocking on her door continued and Soheila kept saying, "I am here." She managed to get into her wheelchair. A short while later, the door burst open. A man appeared. He asked, "Are you the only one in this apartment?" She said, "Who are you?" The man explained that he was a civil defense worker. He told her that she needed to get out of the apartment quickly. The whole block, he added, was about to be targeted by the Zionist regime. Soheila was shocked and angry at the news, but suppressed her emotions. She asked the civil defense worker to help her get two thobs from her closets. And she bid a hasty farewell to her apartment. She was brought to Khan Yunis in southern Gaza. She went to stay with relatives there. Her relatives' home was not adapted for someone using a wheelchair. Soheila needed help going to the bathroom. She depended on her relatives for food and water. Soheila did not stay long in Khan Yunis. Not long after her arrival, the Zionist regime began bombarding the city, forcing a large-scale evacuation. She headed with her relatives to Rafah, further south. Unfortunately, she became separated from them amid a general commotion. Alone on Rafah's streets, Soheila had no idea what to do or where to go. A young man came to her and brought her to a mosque. Soheila took shelter in the mosque. At the mosque, Soheila became quiet, agitated. A volunteer nurse named Sama noticed that her health was worsening. When Soheila was offered food, she refused it. In her distressed state, she accused others in the mosque of trying to kill her. On one occasion, Soheila agreed to eat a little after hours of persuasion. She asked for an apple and some chocolate, but neither of those could be found. If they were still available in the markets, they were too expensive for people taking shelter to afford. Early one morning, she had a burst of energy. She requested to visit the bathroom and to change her clothes. Suddenly, she started vomiting. An ambulance came and took her away. On the way to the hospital, she died. No funeral was held. Some people may attribute her death to natural causes, or her age, or illness. But we are convinced she was tormented and died because of sorrow. She died in a strange place. She was hungry and thirsty and had nobody from her family around her. Thank you.
black and white.
Simplemente ser independientes.
The imperialist forces and the imperialist countries take different measures. One of the most perverse measures are the blockades and sanctions, particularly those exercised by the United States, also by Western Europe, and sometimes even by some international organizations, such as the United Nations. Beware. The main function of these blockades is to try to complicate the life to the inhabitants of the countries with whom they have contradictions and want them to change their way of thought, government, and administration. Because it seems that freedom, free trade, and self-determination does not exist for them. Of course, it doesn't exist. And they immediately take measures that in some cases have resulted in very serious issues in nutrition, medicine, and the most essential elements in some countries. That is to say, who is ultimately punished is the people who receive the sanctions.
Los gobiernos que han sido sancionados.
The governments that have been constantly sanctioned have become stronger in relation to their population and have changed the development model in such a way that, as the great Chinese leader and founder of the People's Republic of China, Mao Zedong, said, the reactionaries lift the rock in their hands to such an extent that when they hold it up, it falls off on their own feet. And the sanctions become something negative for those who have imposed them.
Y se convierten las sanciones en algo negativo para quienes la han llevado adelante. Así tenemos, por ejemplo, que.
Thus, for example, among 17 sanctioned countries with the highest number of sanctioned companies, individuals, and private entities,
particulares.
Some have been strengthened to such a level, as is the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, which has had sanctions since 1950. The Republic of Cuba, which has had sanctions since 1960, and almost total since 1962, and the Islamic Republic of Iran since 1979.
Bueno, también tenemos a Venezuela.
Well, we also have Venezuela, where we have Venezuela today that is satisfying almost 90% of its food consumption through internal production, something that has never been in history.
Los países sancionados.
The sanctioned countries, Nicaragua and Russia, strengthen their internal construction, their internal market,
su mercado interno, su industria,
their internal industry, in such a way that they advance scientifically and militarily, deepening their independence and sovereignty, which has been a setback for imperialism. It is true that a cost that had to be paid. And that affects the people, all the inhabitants of the country that is sanctioned. It is the madness of imperialism, that fanatic thing of subduing others through hunger.
Someter al otro por el hambre.
This is what the gringos and North Americans do. This is what the Americans do. But it goes against them. Today, in the Gaza Strip, Gazans are the most sanctioned on the planet. There, not even medicines, water, or anything else is allowed to enter. Zionism and its godfather, North American imperialism, are the ones leading it. The people are wise. They persevere on the path of independence and sovereignty.
En el camino de la independencia y la soberanía.
The sanctions have proven to be a fiasco at the end of the day. This is Black and White. I'm Eduardo Artes.
Soy Eduardo Artes. Hoy, para hablar desde sanciones y bloqueos,
Today, we have a guest from Italy to talk about sanctions and blockade by imperialist powers against nations, governments, and countries. Fabrizio Cassari, Italian journalist and international analyst, expert in analyzing economic sanctions and punitive measures applied by capitalist powers against nations. Fabrizio Cassari, welcome to Black and White.
A Negro y Blanco por Hispan TV.
Thank you for your invitation. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Fabrizio, desde ubiquémonos en nuestra época desde el punto de vista contemporáneo.
At the current historical stage, what are the goals, consequences, and manifestations of these policies and sanctions by the imperialist powers?
De sanciones y bloqueos por parte de las potencias imperialistas.
La política de bloqueo y de sanciones es parte de...
The policy of blockade and sanctions is called the fourth and fifth generation war, depending on who brings it up. The modern war, which the unipolar world starts, is to simply prevent the world from becoming multipolar. In order to prevent the loss of its hegemonic role as a group, the West is increasingly using all the tools of the fifth generation war, that is, diplomacy, politics, and above all, the media and sanctions, which are the tools of this war. Sanctions today affect 17 countries with specific and selective measures and 6 countries with general measures. We must note that the type of these actions can be general or targeted at individuals. Therefore, a total of 23 countries have been targeted by unilateral, illegitimate, and illegal sanctions. We are talking about 72% of the world's population and more than 30% of the entire world's GDP. I said this to understand the size and the scope of this action. Sanctions, on the other hand, result from a clear but unfair desire to win a competition, competing with products and markets. When you ban the export of a country's products and when you have the same product, you will be the only option for purchase. Furthermore, when you prevent a country from using the international transaction withdrawal system, things get more complicated. The effect of this action is not only on your target country, but also on all countries that want to do business with it. This gets even more complicated when you block a country from accessing SWIFT transactions and also block it from using the dollar currency. When a country is sanctioned, the only option left is to buy Western goods. With these conditions, the West keeps its economy in a state of addiction and says that it is the best and biggest economy. But no, the reason is sanctions. As I told you, sanctions are not a substitute for war. Many times you are told that sanctions are a substitute for war. This is a lie. Sanctions are the art of war. This should be clarified. And in the following, you will see their dire goals.
Entonces esto habría que quedarlo claro, claro. Y vamos a ver después cuáles son sus objetivos finales, ¿no?
Así es. Las sanciones son parte de la guerra. Ahora bien, ¿cómo los pueblos?
Yes, that's right. Sanctions are part of the war. Now, according to the current situation that we are witnessing, the situation has changed. As we know, we see American countries that have stood up for their rights, and how the Democratic People's Republic of Korea has strengthened in science and the military sector, etc. And Venezuela has made an incredible progress in food production. And Iran has solved a series of issues in the food security sector and has made progress in the scientific and military fields. And also in the case of Russia, it seems that the sanctions have had the opposite effect.
La propia Rusia, ¿no es cierto? Pareciera ser que el efecto fue al revés, ¿no? Es decir, hoy día...
Is there a case today that sanctions have been able to achieve the goal of overthrowing a government and changing the direction of a country?
A un gobierno a cambiar la orientación de ese estado?
Jamás, ni uno. Ni uno.
Never, not a single one. There is no country in the world that has been overthrown due to Western sanctions. When I say Western sanctions, it is actually an implicit meaning that means U.S. sanctions. And then the rest of the West also follows these sanctions, but they're not the ones who impose the sanctions. I mean, specifically, the European Union. EU sanctions are ridiculous. For example, it's funny when Latin American countries like Nicaragua is sanctioned because Europe's trade relations with Nicaragua are very small. What does Nicaragua lose when sanctioned? What we see is that the ultimate goal of sanctions is to topple governments. Who are these sanctions against? Against all governments that do not submit their political sovereignty, resources, and political identity to the West, or in fact, America. Countries that believe that they have the right to choose their own government, as well as the right to choose the government's program, goals, and international stance, are considered enemies. How do they become enemies? A campaign is started which almost always says that those countries are violating human rights.
Se comienza la campaña diciendo que esos países casi siempre, siempre violan los derechos humanos.
Ahí vamos a quedar.
We will take a break for a few moments and then continue the second part with Fabrizio Casari.
Volvemos, estamos acá con Fabrizio Casari.
Back here we are with Fabrizio Casari. The discussion is about embargo and blockade. You were giving reasons for your own explanations. Go ahead, Fabrizio, please.
Adelante, por favor, Fabrizio.
Y lo que decía es que no haya habido ni un gobierno en el mundo.
Yes, I was saying that there is not a single government in the world that has been overthrown due to the sanctions of the United States and the West. And there is no government that will fall because of this in the future. This is a zero-sum game, and when despite the efforts of America and the West, when the desired result is not achieved, it means America's defeat. Sanctions are illegitimate because they have not been declared by any international court or the United Nations, which are the only organizations that have the authority to impose sanctions. These sanctions are illegal because they're not announced by the courts. They are announced by the offices of a ministry, and they are part of the political actions. These sanctions are unfair because the people being sanctioned have nothing to do with the government that may or may not fall. But the reality is that they hit the governments that do not surrender their political sovereignty and resources to America. Governments that do not want to determine their own political line and place in international confrontations in exchange for not being sanctioned. These countries are immediately considered by the U.S. as enemy countries, and then the U.S. says that these countries violate human rights or claim that these countries are declared an extraordinary threat to the security of the U.S. Why do they say this, despite the fact that it is a country 30,000 kilometers away? They say this, and they make management statements about it so that they later commit the most theft of resources based on these words. They must have a political justification for their robberies and looting, otherwise the law of America itself will not allow them to do so. The point is that 72% of the world's population is sanctioned by the other 25%. Can a system like this continue to work? Obviously not. Can almost 30% of the GDP be sanctioned? Because the one who used to have 60% of the production and now this figure doesn't even reach 40% of the world's gross domestic product makes such a decision. These are questions that all lawyers and people with knowledge in the world have. But in addition to some of this conversation, there's also the boomerang effect of sanctions. What will happen? When some countries are sanctioned, the United States and Europe cannot officially sell those products, and this causes their products to be stockpiled. These products expire. For one, because I remind you again, we are talking about 72% of the world's population. So when you know that you can't do business with 72% of the world's population, you can't sell anything to them. You can't buy anything from them. Your production will only be for 28% of the world's population. This amount is very, very low. So your economy will have very, very little growth and possibly negative growth. So this is what is officially on paper, while the U.S. has historically shown that it sanctions with one hand and negotiates with the other. One example is that they announced that they want to impose the biggest and toughest sanctions in history against Russia. Now, on the other hand, as a result of this action, the growth of Russia's GDP is higher than that of the European Union, which said it wanted to finish Russia's work. On the other hand, the oil and gas that reaches Europe, which they said can no longer come from Russia, still comes from Russia. It just happens that it goes through other countries, and because of that, they charge you more. So you have the same oil as before, just a little less volume, and you're paying a lot more money for it than before. And you're no longer dependent on one country, but three or four. And of course, the gas that you are going to get from the U.S., the U.S. liquefied natural gas, the amount is very small and not enough for Europe at all. And the price is much more expensive than what Russia was giving you. So what a smart person at the center of the unipolar imperial decision-making apparatus would adopt such a stupid strategy.
Cuarto decisional del imperio unipolar decide semejante estrategia idiota.
Una estrategia idiota, como dices tú, Fabricio. De cualquier manera...
A stupid strategy, as you said, Fabrizio. Fortunately, countries have been able to industrialize and ensure their own food security and develop in this direction. This is one of the consequences of sanctions. This is a very complicated matter. On the other hand, there is a very interesting phenomenon, which is the coordination, unity and cooperation between the embargoed countries, which is a kind of resistance and building a different environment.
Que también es una forma de resistencia y de construir un espacio distinto. Mira.
Look, the nations of the sanctioned countries use their intelligence to make fun of many, or in fact, all sanctions. I remember when I was in the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, they definitely made fun of some of the sanctions. As I remember that in the period of socialist Albania, in the period between 1976 and 1986, there were large companies producing textile products, and all of their products ended up in the market with the label Made in Italy.
Telares, mucho. Y todos, al final, salían al mercado y estaban en el mercado con la etiqueta Made in Italia.
This means that nations have the ability to overcome sanctions and blockades in any way. What experience do you have of dealing with and passing behind sanctions?
Para superarlos. ¿Qué experiencia tú ves aquí en el desarrollo desde los pueblos para enfrentar y superar estas sanciones?
La cuestión es incrementar.
The issue is a significant increase in development of South-South relations. South-South relations should take the place of North. Today it is much easier to exchange products with any other country than it was 20 years ago. Every country can achieve a level of production of products and services. The policy of imperialism is stupid because they don't take into account that in the past, until about 50 to 20 years ago, resources were exchanged with technology and its improvements. Today, the owners of resources no longer need new technologies. Because firstly, some countries have very, very advanced technology. And secondly, if the technology doesn't reach them, there are countries that are willing to give the technology, for example, China, Russia, and Brazil itself. So what is the threat where the logic of exchange prevails? When you pay the price of my product at the international market, and if you want, you cannot do the exchange, the idea of you sanctioning me is stupid. You see, they sanctioned the Russian oil and gas pipeline to Europe and wanted to prevent Russian gas from reaching Europe. But what happened was that gas flows from Turkey and Azerbaijan and then returns here. What did Russia do? It used to have a strong trading partner, the European Union, and specifically Germany and two lines that transported oil and gas quickly and directly. For political reasons, He sold gas at a very low price. Today, it sells this gas at a relatively higher price to India and China and to other countries such as Pakistan, countries that did not buy it before. Russia started diversifying its customers and therefore has many more customers than before and is much less dependent on one customer only.
Al diversificar la cartera, a tener mucho más gente que te compra, tener mucha menos dependencia de cualquiera de ellos.
La realidad actual donde se comienza.
Today's reality is that countries are starting to do business with their own national currencies. India works with rupees, Russia with rubles, China with yuan, etc. Today, therefore, the dollar is not very decisive. How does this approach affect the possibility of circumventing or neutralizing sanctions?
En la posibilidad de sortear o burlar las sanciones.
Mira, hermano, en una forma muy fácil, es un desastre para Estados Unidos.
Look, brother, this is very easy. It's a disaster for America, because thanks to the dollar, as the only player in international exchange, America was given the ability and power in international trade to determine who sells what and who buys what and the terms of payment, and this way it earns billions of dollars per day per transaction. This situation is not going to continue now. The dollar will no longer be the only medium of exchange. According to the predictions made in a 10-year period, the dollar will probably not be the first currency. Why? Because as always, there's a proverb that says, idiots, in addition to being stupid, also become blind. When the U.S. tried to sanction Russia, it made it impossible for Russia to access the dollar market and the Russian account was blocked, like what they did with Venezuela in the past. Most of the countries in the international level have resources abroad. For emergencies, it can happen. Now, almost all strategic reserves have been in dollars. Now, there are many countries that say, if I ever get into a conflict with America for any reason, America will stop me and take all my reserves from me. No, it is better not to do this. And they are de-dollarizing their reserves. There are many countries that willingly de-dollarize their resources gradually without creating a monetary shock. And many more countries are planning to do this. Having less dollars means having less demand for dollars. Less demand for dollars means less production of dollars. Less production of dollars means that the U.S. debt cannot be paid.
Por la deuda de los Estados Unidos, la cara de impagable.
Gracias, Fabrizio. Desgraciadamente.
Thank you, Fabrizio. Unfortunately, we have reached the end of the program. Thank you very much for your participation. This is Black and White.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. Now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
In the limelight.
In Gaza, many healthcare facilities have been decimated by the Zionist regime's attacks or evacuated, while a few remain open but severely limited in the care and services they offer. Israeli regime forces have repeatedly laid siege to hospital facilities, killing hundreds of medical workers and kidnapping scores of others, despite thousands of internally displaced Palestinians sheltering in the healthcare complexes. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. The Electronic Intifada wrote, "It took 9 hours before Shahinaz al-Attar began her dialysis session. She had left the tent where she is staying in Rafah, southern Gaza, at 8 a.m. After arriving at Abu Yusuf al-Najjar, a hospital in the city, she had to sit in an uncomfortable chair and wait. Shahinaz, 27, was uprooted from Beit Lahia in northern Gaza during the early stages of the current war. She first went to Ashifa, Gaza's largest hospital, but had to evacuate when the Zionist regime attacked. Israel's violence was so extreme that the hospital could no longer function. Following the attack on Ashifa Hospital, Shahinaz moved to a school run by the UN Agency for Palestine Refugees, UNRWA, in the southern city of Khan Yunis. She was able to receive dialysis in Nasser Medical Complex initially. That hospital, also located in Khan Yunis, was later besieged by the Zionist regime's forces with catastrophic effects for its patients. As a result, Shahinaz is now having treatment for her kidney complaint in Rafah." Shahinaz said, "Before the war, I used to have dialysis 3 times a week. Each session would last for 4 hours. When we were displaced to Ashifa Hospital, the sessions were reduced to 3 hours. Because the health service in Gaza is under the severest strain imaginable, Shahinaz can now only have 2 dialysis sessions of 2 hours per week. Shahinaz is accompanied by her father when she visits the hospital for dialysis. Getting there from her tent is an ordeal. It often takes an hour before they can find someone who will drive them there. On occasions, she has traveled in an overcrowded truck, a cart pulled by an animal, or in a tuk-tuk. Abu Yusuf al-Najjar Hospital has less than 20 dialysis machines. Before the current genocidal war, it treated just over 100 kidney patients. That number has risen sevenfold. The heavy demand for the dialysis machines means that patients have to endure lengthy waits before one becomes free. Most of the medicines and patients need are not available or very scarce. Shahinaz only has canned food to eat, which is totally unsuitable for kidney patients. She struggles to find clean water. She said, I have no hope that I can stay alive. I'm very tired and I feel that if I don't die because of the bombing, I will die from illness. Middle East Monitor also wrote, the Secretary General of Doctors Without Borders said they have been witnessing the systematic destruction of health services in the Gaza Strip since October 7, 2023. Talking to Anadolu Agency on the latest situation in Gaza under Israel's brutal bombing campaign, Christopher Lockyer said there is a catastrophe across Gaza. We are particularly concerned about the situation in the north of Gaza, where we have almost no access. He added that MSF is incredibly worried about what will happen if the Zionist regime launches a ground attack on Rafah in the south of Gaza, where 1.5 million people are currently taking refuge. The bombing campaign has brought with it the systematic destruction of health services in the Gaza Strip, he explained, emphasizing that medical teams have been compelled to shift between hospitals due to evacuations. Highlighting the challenging nature of treating patients with injuries that necessitates high-quality medical care, he said, it's extremely difficult, even impossible, to provide this level of care to patients in Gaza right now. Lockyer added, we genuinely seek access to provide treatment and support to the people in the northern region of Gaza. Aerial aid and the construction of a temporary port will not solve the situation in Gaza, adding that it was worried that the images of airdrops of aid distract from the situation on the ground and emphasizing the need for a political solution. He stated, healthcare workers must not endure intimidation or fear of indiscriminate bombing before they can deliver healthcare and humanitarian aid. For meaningful humanitarian assistance in Gaza, we require far more access, resources, and security. He added, we fear that hunger is being used as a weapon of war with this blockade. Our staff members report starvation and malnutrition affecting them and their families.
Yani
bazar
Whether man-made or not, food can have fascinating backstories. Products usually take a long journey before they end up on the dining table. Nevertheless, the food industry follows several golden rules that have helped it steadily grow over time. The most important of these is continuous product innovation and improved production processes to reduce costs and wastage. Others involve packaging and product accessibility, but probably the king of all rules is the taste that drives the food industry.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Bazaar, the weekly program that analyzes markets, profits, industries, and all sorts of things that connect us nationally and internationally. This week, we will be exploring the food industry and its related agricultural markets. We wanted to see how the food sector has expanded over the years and what companies are doing to increase their profits. So, let's check out the Tasty Grub.
To become more familiar with how much work goes into food production, we visited Golha Food Industries. It was established nearly a century ago, and its products are now a household name. It produces hundreds of items in seven categories, such as dried legumes and fruit, spices and canned products. It also takes great pride in its healthy product line, including gluten-free flour products. This producer has devoted a lot of attention to the packaging of its products. Due to its diverse product list, it purchases such materials as cans, plastic, and cardboard to design the appropriate type of storage systems for distribution. The company has a massive daily output due to its expansive production facilities. Most of the work is done by automated machines, but the fine details are handled by experienced staff. All production processes start when raw material enters the company. These materials are first tested for quality before hitting the production floors, most of which are domestically supplied. After being tested, the material is sent to various closed circuit machines for processing. Then it is time for sorting and more quality control tests before packaging.
Food production is a very sensitive process requiring many checks and controls that guarantee the final product is safe for consumption. And production machines play an essential role as they reduce errors and maintain constant output results. Plus, many of these machines have been domestically engineered, whereas they were previously imported at high prices.
This company has a highly equipped quality control and research and development lab. It's where many new products are created and food safety standards are controlled. Moreover, the staff in this department implement food sciences to make innovative products. It might be interesting to know that this department also has some of the best food tasters. This producer has been awarded Best Research and Development Department in Food Production for many consecutive years. Among its many achievements, it has also been awarded the certificate of favored brand by customers. This wouldn't be possible without adhering to strict national and international food safety and production management standards. Following such standards has helped it maintain its export share in the global food market. With years of experience, this company has grown such that it provides thousands of employment opportunities, both directly and indirectly. It also has thousands of agencies and stores all over the country. Plus, its products can also be purchased online. As part of its future vision, this company is looking to increase its market share both domestically and abroad. It also has long-term plans to increase production and improve the production process for efficiency.
The Iranian food industry has taken giant strides away from its traditional production methods. Industry participants say using food sciences and new technologies has helped the food industry grow faster than before. Never more than now has food been more accessible. In fact, it only requires a touch of a few buttons to receive it at home. Therefore, food packaging is a critical part of the production.
Over the last decade, there has been a great emphasis on developing packaging for the food industry. This is because Iran indigenized many machines needed.